Hello and welcome to the Geological Society podcast. My name's Sarah Day, and today, in the first of a series focusing on the geology of Great Britain, I'm talking to Danielle Shreve, Professor of Quaternary Science at Royal Holloway. Professor Shreve is a vertebrate paleontologist working on Ice Age mammals, and we met up to talk about the geological history of the River Thames, what Trafalgar Square might have looked like thousands of years ago, and why she'd like to see a hippopotamus on the fourth plinth. I guess people don't really think of the Thames or London generally when they think of paleontology. Is there actually a lot more than we think to find?
There's a huge amount, and in fact it's all around us, under our feet, and although of course a lot of the landscape is obscured now by the buildings that we now have in central London, London itself is home to a huge number of really iconic sites. So for example, Trafalgar Square is known for its hippopotamus fauna, which dates from about 125,000 years ago, the last interglacial before we're the present day. You can still get a sense of the river terraces that are present walking up from the river today, and walking up away from the river you can walk up the terrace sequence. The terraces are formed as a series of almost sort of bench-like deposits that reflect former remnants of the floodplain, and because of a combination of climate change and progressive uplift of southern England, the terrace remnants are now preserved as almost like a staircase, with the highest terraces being the oldest and the lowest ones being down near the floodplain today.
And so you were focusing on the sort of lifespan of the Thames. How old is it?
We can trace the history of the Thames back somewhere beyond about 2 million years, but the evidence around that time is quite sketchy. We know that the Thames was a much larger river, that its course was rather different, and in fact it started off by draining the area of Wales and the Welsh borders. And we can tell that it came down through the Midlands because of the kinds of rock types and also other lines of evidence that it's brought with it along the course.
And it, would it have looked a very different river then?
Certainly around 2 million years ago things were very different, because large parts of eastern England were occupied by shallow sea. And we actually have very little evidence of what life was like on land. We do have some fossils, particularly mammal fossils, that were of animals that were living around, died, got incorporated into rivers and washed down into these estuaries. So really exciting things like ancient mammoths, mastodons, tapirs, red pandas, even porcupines. So all kinds of exotic fauna around 2 million years ago.
And what's happened? Why do we not have those animals anymore?
Well, it's just a relic of climate change, extinctions, and new forms evolving. So as we go on through the last 2 million years, the climate oscillates rapidly between periods where we had temperate climates and temperatures that were as warm as today, sometimes even warmer, and other times when it was severely cold and we frequently had glaciation, so glaciers, ice sheets over much of Britain. The Thames is actually one of our most important records for understanding climate change over the last 500,000 years, certainly in Europe, but arguably anywhere in the world. And that's because we've got this relatively complete sequence of river terrace deposits, each of which preserves a sandwich of climate records, if you like. So generally speaking, cold climate deposits at the base, then finer-grained clays and silts that are often full of plant remains and animal remains, and then a return to cold climate conditions towards the top within each of these terraces. And each of these interglacials, these warm stages in the past, has had quite a different characteristic. So sometimes temperatures were warmer than the present day. So the last interglacial, for example, we're looking at summer temperatures that were maybe 5 degrees warmer than what we have at present, which is substantial warming. Other interglacials were no warmer than the present, and some were slightly cooler and more boreal looking. So actually having all of these preserved together in one place where we can compare and contrast them is really, really valuable.
Mm. And presumably at that time as well, Britain wasn't isolated as an island.
Britain was connected to the mainland until about 450,000 years ago, when we had a very severe period of glaciation known as the Anglian Glaciation, when an ice sheet came down as far south as Finchley in North London, and it had a really, really dramatic effect on the river. It caused a huge ponding of an ice-dammed lake in the southern North Sea basin, which eventually led to a catastrophic overspill and the chalk bridge that connected us to the continent was breached, creating the Straits of Dover for the first time. And really from that point on, from about 450,000, Britain was periodically an island. So of course that affects the timing and nature of early humans and animals coming in and out of Britain.
So in terms of humans, how long have we been around the Thames or in Britain?
Our earliest evidence of humans in Britain is from maybe 650,000 years, possibly slightly older than that. And really from 500,000 years onwards, we've got very good evidence of a sequence of different species of early humans active in Britain up and down the Thames Valley. So we start off with Homo heidelbergensis around 500,000 years ago. And then from about 250,000 years ago, we have Neanderthals. Finally, the Neanderthals go extinct and are replaced throughout Europe by modern humans, our species, Homo sapiens, from about 40,000 years onwards.
And what was our sort of, or Neanderthals' relationship to the Thames itself?
There have certainly been evidence of early Neanderthals, Neanderthal forebears, if you like, from the site of Swanscombe in Kent from about 400,000 years onwards. And then fully-fledged Neanderthals, very, very active up and down the Thames Valley. So we have a sequence of sites, some very spectacular sites in West London, in Acton, for example, but also over in the east, in the lower Thames Valley, around the sites like Northfleet, Crayford, for example. And we can see that Neanderthals were really well adapted to the environment in the Thames Valley. They would have used the landscape, and they were particularly focused on big game hunting. We know that from chemical analyses of their bones, that they were consuming a vast amount of meat. And the species that they had evolved alongside, so things like mammoth, woolly rhino, horse, deer, rhinos, all of these they were supremely well adapted to hunting. And they would have used the landscape, particularly the Thames Valley, as a place, as a focal point for that hunting.
And what sort of evidence do we have for that? What kind of artifacts are we finding?
Human fossils themselves are very, very rare, very rare. You can almost count the number of sites that we have on the fingers of one hand. But fortunately, we have a huge repository of stone tools, so artifacts of different kinds, and we can see those. In many cases, they are abraded artifacts that have been transported by the river, but sometimes we find sites that are in situ, undisturbed, where you can see where somebody sat down and maybe manufactured a hand axe or produce some flakes, and those flakes would then have been used for a variety of purposes, and we can refit those so that we can see exactly how the stone tool was made. And as well as the stone tools, occasionally we also find remains of mammal bones that have got clear evidence of exploitation. So they might be smashed, broken open for marrow extraction, or they might be covered in cut marks from flint tools. So butchery, obviously disarticulating carcasses to get the meat, but also, of course, making use of other resources, so things like pelts, for example, so skinning. Even in the present warm stage that we're in now, the Holocene, the last 10,000 years, there would have been Mesolithic people, so the last hunter-gatherers that we had in Britain prior to the dawn of agriculture and settlement, there would have been hunter-gatherers hunting the last remnants of, if you like, the megafauna, so things like aurochs, elk, red deer, hunting in the early part of this warm stage.
So it sounds like the Thames itself has been quite an important factor in how Britain's developed. Is that going to continue?
It's been hugely influential, certainly in shaping large parts of southern Britain and obviously dictating the way that settlement arose around the city that we recognise today. I think, obviously, we're always interested in how our current interglacial is going to evolve, how climate will change, and looking at the responses of the river, but also looking at the responses of the flora and fauna as well. I think one of the nice things as well is that we can really see continuity between the activities of the antiquarians from sort of 1800s onwards and link those today to the kinds of research that we're doing. So we're now looking at the Thames with fresh eyes, looking at those sequences again, establishing in much more detail how particularly warm climates evolved in the past, how they differ from each other, and how interglacials end, because of course that's one thing that's very relevant to us today.
If we picked a sort of certain area in London that's very iconic, such as Trafalgar Square, something like that, mm-hmm. are we able now, do we have enough information to actually say what it would have looked like back through these periods? Or
definitely. So Trafalgar Square is a very good case study, really, because there were lots of different lines of evidence that were drawn from the excavations that were done, particularly in the 1950s. So we have a good idea of the vegetation from the pollen. We know what insects were present. We certainly know what mammals were around. So things like striped-tusked elephant, narrow-nosed rhino, hippos, large herds of aurochs, red deer. There were lions around. There were brown bears. So we could actually reconstruct what Trafalgar Square would have looked like 125,000 years ago very, very clearly. It was always one of the things I really wanted to do, was to see a hippopotamus on that plinth in Trafalgar Square. I think that would be fantastic, and it would really bring it home to people about, you know, what the past was like in the not-so-distant geological history, really.
Danielle Shreve was speaking after giving a lecture at Burlington House called The Thames Through Time, which you can view on our website at www.geosoc.org.uk/Thames Through Time. In the next episode, I'm talking to Simon Winchester, best-selling author of The Map That Changed the World, about his research into one of London's most celebrated scientific figures, William Smith, as well as getting a sneak preview of his next book.